Hey, USA Volleyball fans, this is Clarence Hughes, co-host of the USA Volleyball Show. Here's an excerpt from John Sparrow's NTDP Academy course.
Hi, my name is John Sparrow. I'm head coach for the U.S. men's national team. We're doing a course today on observations that we've made in the national team gym about collegiate players that arrive and make a transition to the professional game. What are some of the things that you can learn from our experiences that can help you prepare for that now? We don't have a pro league here in the United States, so you have to leave to go overseas, whether it's Asia, Europe, South America. Athletes typically leave sometime in August to September on average, and they leave and they're alone. They go overseas in a totally new culture, totally new environment, totally new coaching experience. We've already talked about the training room and the strength conditioning. All those things are vastly different cultures. How do you handle that? That's really a challenge for some athletes. So I think the first thing we encourage our athletes to do is embrace the experience and the opportunity to do something that's truly unique and special. If you want to hear more about our observations on how to best prepare yourself for a professional volleyball career, subscribe to the NTDP Academy at usavolleyball.org.
City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball. My name is Stephen Munson, and with me today, as always, Clarence Hughes. Clarence, how are you doing?
You know, I just want to point out that I think you could have went a little longer on that opening. You know, I felt like you gave it a good 80%. We needed a 95 to 100, but we're not going to talk about that right now.
Hey, I'm recovering from a cold. I'm recovering from a cold. Baby steps, moving back in. It's fine. It's fine.
As my voice is almost cracking, we're not gonna go into that. I'm doing good. How about you? How's everything been with you?
Yeah,
I know you're recovering from a cold, but you know,
Otherwise, doing really well. Really excited. Approaching girls 18s, which is going to be my first event of the season. But you have been to one event, two weekends, the Salt Lake City Showdown. We talked a little bit about that last episode, but how's that going?
You know, we got a lot of good feedback from those who participated in Salt Lake, from the logo that our amazing creative team, Barbara Grice and Jade Riggs, put together. Just from the overall run of show and operational standpoint, we got a lot of great feedback, and they're really happy that we moved to Salt Lake City and the fact that we're going to be there through, I believe, 2026. So if your club missed out on Salt Lake City this year, you got a lot of many years coming to register. Just make sure you sign up on time and complete all your requirements. But yeah. Sunshine was a success. I'm glad to be back in Colorado Springs for a day because I'm actually going to Anaheim for another for another 18th qualifier. I got to coach in. So I'm glad I get to coach and not have to worry about running the tournament. So yeah, that is it.
Did you do some snowboarding out there? Skip some skiing while you're there?
We went tubing. It was actually a blast. I had never been tubing before too, so it was just kind of great. I did think I was gonna flip over a couple times here and there too. I wish we would have had time to actually take a full day off and go snowboarding or skiing, but 2 hours of tubing is enough to make you sore and walking up those hills and doing a bunch of that stuff too. But it was a lot of fun.
Especially after a full weekend of work too at the event. So
I mean, didn't you go skiing or snowboarding recently?
I did. Yeah. See? I did. Yeah. I went snowboarding recently with my buddy, a USA Volleyball's own Nate Goh, assistant coach on the men's US men's national team. Maybe a future guest on our podcast. We'll see. But yeah. I'm enjoying it. I'm going to have to take another day off and get up to the mountains too here soon.
Yeah, Nate's a cool guy. I met him at the Open program for the first time. Well, we've talked, but it was just like, oh my God, face to face, you know? So he's a cool guy, and I'm glad you guys had fun up there too. But talking about snow, we're talking about mountains. Let's bring it down over into Orlando and talk about Sunshine, that's coming up next. Sunshine Classic coming up on April 1st through the 3rd. Can't wait for that. Can't wait to be in sunny Orlando, sunny Florida.
Sunny Orlando, warmer weather.
On to the next event.
We're about to get some snow here in Colorado, so just in time to get out of there.
Oh, God, don't remind me. I have to drive to the airport in that. I'm in Denver.
Oh, yep.
It'll be fun. But we're talking about Florida. We're talking about great things. We're talking about volleyball. Let's talk about some updates on the beach side of things. In other news, in Fort Lauderdale, the city of Fort Lauderdale will be hosting the 2022 Beach National Championship that'll be ran through July 26th through the 28th. Teams can earn bids to the national championship by competing in Beach National Qualifiers and Beach Regional Qualifiers around the country as part of the USA Volleyball Beach Tour. Marvelous tour. If you don't know about it, definitely go to usavolleyball.org to find out more information. There have been more than 400 teams that have competed in the 2021 Beach Tour, and also in Fort Lauderdale. The championships were in Fort Lauderdale last year. I had the privilege and honor of being there and seeing all the teams compete, and it was amazing. So earn your bids and definitely come out and compete. So we're so very excited to return this summer. Fort Lauderdale was an amazing place. And again, we will see you there. And again, you need more information, usavolleyball.org to find out more how you can qualify, where your BRQs are, and where your BNQs are. Good luck to all teams competing.
Yep. And staying on the beach, the 2022 Beach Pro Tour Elite 16 event in Rosarito, Mexico begins tomorrow, Thursday, March 24th. So several USA teams will be competing. And our very own Kyle Scholzen is on site covering the event. So follow along on USA Volleyball social media and usavolleyball.org for results and how you could watch the matches live.
Fun fact, guys, if you find Kyle in Rosarito, he will give you $100 out of his own pocket. So remember, find Kyle. It's like a where's Waldo kind of thing. Find Kyle. He will give you $100. And I know he hates me for saying that right now. But
He'll definitely do an interview with you, though. So there you go. Let's move on to today's guest. Today, we have a very exciting episode. We welcome former U.S. Women's National Team member, current member of the USA Volleyball Board of Directors and volleyball head coach at Alabama State University, Penny Lucas White. Shout out to one of our content producers, Laura Fawcett, for setting this up. Her and Penny have a great relationship going back to their time at the Air Force Academy together, where Laura was the SID and Penny coached volleyball there. So you'll hear some great stories between them later on in our conversation. But let me just say, listeners, buckle up for this conversation with Penny. You're going to be so inspired, so hyped. I know Clarence and I were just so motivated and we just wanted to get out and play volleyball. We told her, if she ever starts a men's team, we're going to be first in line for that tryout.
We might get cut, but hey, we'll be there.
I told her I'd do anything. I'll serve water on the bench. I don't care. I'll wipe sweat off the floor. I don't care. But let's go right into this episode. Here's Penny Lucas White.
Let's get started. I think we got quite a few questions that might lead to some pretty interesting conversations and follow-ups. So we'll start with most important question number one. How did you get involved with volleyball? Tell us that story.
Well, the funny part is I was a basketball player, and I tell everybody, in every neighborhood, you always got a basketball court. Volleyball, we kind of consider the elite sport because you need a gym and nets and more equipment. But I was raised with five brothers. So you go outside and you play basketball with your brothers. Well, it was back in the late 70s, I apologize. I go to high school and the high school doesn't have a basketball team. Who does that? But they had a volleyball team. And a lady by the name of, at that time, was Myra Smith. She's now Myra Manser, encouraged me to go out for volleyball. And I'm like, volleyball? I don't know how to play volleyball. I'm a 10th grader. I'm a basketball player. Well, I went out for volleyball and fell absolutely in love with the sport. And I was a late bloomer, and there, voila. I became a volleyball player. And the thing that really who I am today, I'm in high school and USA comes to LSU and plays at LSU. And I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I get to meet Flo Hyman. And Flo Hyman signs the top of my cap. And I was sold after watching that team play. And I told went home and told mom, I want to be a volleyball player when I grow up. So there you go.
Wow, that's so cool. So you mentioned your coach, I believe Myra, and then Flo Hyman as well, getting to meet Flo Hyman and her signing your cap. Were there, you know, talk a little bit about those role models, and then were there any more role models, mentors in your early career that kind of inspired you?
Well, early in my career, of course, you know, I had LSU to look forward to. And that's when I was in my teens and I'm playing high school. But the young woman that molded and shaped me at that time was Myra Manser. And she just really nurtured us as young women. And I remember back then when, you know, looking for scholarships was quite different. She put us in the back of her Suburban and she drove me to Houston, Texas to try out at the University of Houston. And then at the time, the coach, head coach was Ruth Nelson, to try out for that team. And she drove me to Tulane and we were just riding all over the place to try out to play in college. I ended up getting a scholarship offer at Tulane, not knowing any better because the head coach left that summer. I was like, oh, I'm scared because I was going for the coach. And to those that are listening, we don't choose schools based on the coach solely. We choose schools that's based on the quality of education. So I ended up staying home and going to Louisiana State University. Who knew that Ruth Nelson would then take the job a year later at Louisiana State University. So she became a role model for me and a mentor, Myra Manser, and of course, Rose Majors Powell, who played on the team with me, who ended up playing on the 84 Olympic team, becoming a silver medalist with Flo Hyman. And we are still close, very, very close friends to this day. But just the volleyball world being so small. And when I say small, Danielle Scott and I grew up in the same neighborhood. So then Danielle Scott kind of started playing ball. And we're 10 years apart, but Ruth Nelson mentored her as well. And she goes off to play at Long Beach State. But it's just funny how volleyball expands and grows and how it grows all of those people that are connected to you.
I love that. The small community aspect is so real too in volleyball. Even, you know, cool to hear it that it was like that back then too, but it's still like that today. Everyone's kind of connected in some way. Really cool. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
I do want to ask really quickly, what was that experience like going from college to try out for these teams? And, you know, do you want to talk through any differences as to, you know, what you personally went through then compared to, you know, just how athletes, you know, try out and experience colleges for the first time now?
Well, that is a wonderful question. I think it was very intimidating for me at the time. You know, you walking in a gym full of young women that have already established themselves and you're trying to make an impact or make an impression upon the head coach at that moment. But yet it was an experience that I appreciate to this day. We know at the Division II level and other schools in AIA, they still have the opportunity to go in and work out with the teams. However, at the Division I level, that's not the case today. Because of our great technology and everything, you think about it, I can watch and evaluate a kid on video and we get them in. I remember when we used to mail the big VHS videotapes and the DVDs, you know, in order for a coach to look at you. And now they can follow you on Instagram. We can look at the, you know, we can just click on the link and watch the kid today. So we've come a very long way. But still, I think there's nothing like the naked eye really evaluating the true ability of a student athlete. You know, you still can't take that away, but it does streamline who you're going to go out and take even closer looks at.
I was on mute here. Sorry about that. Thank you for sharing that. That's really cool to hear that, that connection and how things have changed too. Yeah. Over time. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges you faced kind of early on as a Black athlete getting into volleyball?
Yeah. Well, one, I think, and I can also relate it to today, the mm-hmm. challenges, I think it's one, opportunity. Just create an opportunity for young student athletes of color, because you can say, depending on what state you're in, the cost to play travel ball or club ball is pretty expensive. So thank God for the Starlings who came along to allow and to create a pathway that still student athletes can be seen, but opportunity. And hopefully as we continue to evolve in the sport, we will continue to be committed to create an opportunity. If that was a club ball, if that was the only way that I would be seen when I was growing up, my parents didn't have that type disposable income. It just wasn't going to happen. So, but I would think that we're missing out on a lot of gifted athletes of color because of that drawback, because it, you know, it's becoming so expensive. So opportunity, that's an obstacle. And then I'm going to talk about something that I think need to be discussed. When you get the opportunity, let's talk about the coaches that use you up just because of your athleticism, that will not really train you, technically train you. Because I get kids that are athletic as all get out. That's my slang. But they have not been truly trained. And the coaches that they played for did not technically set a foundation to where when they go up to swing, they understand how to hit around a block or how to read and go and dig a ball. And that's unfortunate. You use them up for their athleticism instead of really pouring into them and creating an upside to them that a pathway could possibly lead to the Olympic team. And that's the difference.
Yeah, we actually just talked to Cassidy Lichtman, and she talked a lot about having that all around skill set. And I think that is very important. What you just mentioned is you have a kid come into the gym and they're so athletic that you're just blinded by that. And you just focus only on that and not trying to develop them fully as a player and a person, too. I think that is very important. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I also want to just circle back, you know, she's got a lot of calendar invites here. Sorry about that. just want to circle back on, you know, just touching base on what you said again. You know, as we're in Women's History Month here in March, and we wrapped up Black History Month back in, you know, this past February. And we're really centering a lot of, you know, our interviews and content around these conversations that we really need to start, you know, having at a more efficient and, you know, actually impactful level. What are some ideas or some, you know, methods that, you know, an organization like USA Volleyball or, you know, volleyball organizations across the, you know, the country can really use to start to create these opportunities for these athletes of color, for these Black athletes, for, you know, for the ability to, you know, be able to come into that pipeline and really be considered for a national team instead of just being used for your athleticism, like you mentioned?
I think we have enough people that are involved in our country in the sport that I think you have to approach it from a different angle. And my angle is going to be, you know, let high school coaches send in letters to whatever that may be, whatever central location it may be, of kids that they think, given an opportunity, may have an upside to them that the investment would be worth it. And sometimes that student athlete may not be playing club ball, but they their parents can allow them to play high school ball, but we've got to create a different pipeline. I would say, even if you train 1,000 kids because you run these different sections of showcases or just training centers, so to speak, and you get to look at those kids, if you pull 10 out of the 1,000, it would have been worth it. Because one, you've impacted 1,000 students, but you have truly opened a door for 10. But they may never be seen if we don't create a different avenue. And sometimes you may not be able to do it only through club, because some kids can't afford club. Or if you're running all of these different events, club events, then take a percentage of that, because during the George Floyd and all of that, all of us started to talk about how we're going to give back, how we're going to be different, how we're going to become one race, the human race. Then how about if we take a sum of the money that we make in a big club event and say, I'm going to target the city of Chicago right now. And I'm going to run 4 training events with some of the best coaches of color to go in and impact those kids of color. And then let's go from there. They, one, would benefit from seeing people in the business that looks like them. And they will be trained and understand and start to understand history and whose shoulders they really stand on, who's paved the way, the pioneers. And not all the time are they going to be women of color or men of color, because of Ruth Nelson didn't always, she's not a woman of color, but she always worked hard to provide opportunities for women of color. And there are a lot of people like that. A Mary Wise is that woman. And we can go on and on and talk about that. But we've got to start thinking differently in order to provide more opportunities. I don't want to put a Band-Aid over anything to fix it and keep moving on. And unless I speak, my voice goes silent and the ideas go out of the window. I refuse to be that person. I will speak and I will raise the flag.
Thank you for that. Just to circle back on that a little bit of, you know, you being willing to speak, you being willing to raise the flag and, you know, bring up, you know, these Band-Aid situations that, you know, have been, you know, just placed on these issues with a lot of organizations. How has that impacted, you know, your journey through volleyball from when you first got introduced to it as a sophomore in high school? You know, have you come across some, you know, I'm sure you have, but, you know, some of those personal, you know, issues and battles, you know, socially and, you know, just across the entire spectrum of these issues that we've been having since, you know, decades and decades and decades ago. How has that impacted your journey up until now?
I think first, let me start off by saying volleyball has given me a life that opened so many doors and that I was able to explore, and it helped create the person I am. One that is well-rounded, one that is world thinking, because I had the opportunity to play for the USA. I've had the opportunity to travel abroad and to parli italiano, to speak Italian, to learn Italian, to play with my Italian teammates, to live in Germany. So I have a worldly view. It's a little bit more holistic than a kid that never get out. So with that being said, I think it's important to understand now, even though I've had a wonderful life through volleyball, there still comes the challenges that when I walk in the gym, the assumptions where, you know, your perspective, you know, your perception of me is your reality without ever really getting to know me. Or if something, how I'm perceived, if I'm on a team and you see this woman of color, you may say, serve her. Women of color can't pass. Or let's talk about if we're out in the public, just the way all of a sudden your vernacular changes because you're speaking to me. Hey, sister, no, I want you to speak to me just the way you would if I was the color of the rainbow. You don't have to change to think that's your way of connecting with me. And so those little subtle, you know, things, incidents, doesn't go unnoticed. I notice those. So coming back, because after a beautiful experience in being able to be the head coach at the Air Force Academy, where we build leaders there. And I still use the word we, because I still have such lifelong relationships with all of my former players and colleagues that it changed the way I live and it changed the way I train. So I'm not only just training the athlete on the physical side, I'm training the athlete on the mental side. And I'm also seeing them as a leader. We're building leaders. And we're building leaders. And if you approach your job that way, then if you can replicate that, now you're giving them a real upside and a real future. So it has changed the way I approach my student athletes here and my philosophy and how I coach. Being back on the campus, not back, because I didn't get my education from an HBCU, but I'll say being back in my roots and being on the campus of an HBCU has allowed me an opportunity to pour into young women like never before. I take every experience that I've learned and I pour into them. And I really make sure that they benefit and that they take these opportunities. They're not for granted. But when we walk out on the court, we are to be respected just the way we were when I was at the University of Memphis, just the way we were when I was at the Air Force Academy. Because sometimes being at an HBCU, I feel like I've gotten on a court playing a PWI. HBCU means historically Black college or university. A PWI means a predominantly white institution. And if the officials took a look at us, I think they thought they'll look at their clock. They're going to have a fast match. That is not the case. I don't like self-fulfilling prophecies. And I really don't want to make this about me pounding, but I have a platform. I have a position. I want to bring awareness. So when we become aware, we treat each other equal. We are one race, the human race, and we love one sport, volleyball. And so let's go at it from a place of equity, from a level playing field. And I don't know if that answered your question, but I kind of went a roundabout way just to talk about my experience.
It did. It definitely did. I touched on some, you know, key instances around the board, but, you know, I really appreciate that answer. And yes, you did way more than answer the question. So again, we appreciate that. I know that was one of the ones that wasn't on the list, but thank you for touching on that.
Yeah, that was amazing. Love hearing you talk about your coaching philosophy. And that kind of segues right into, you'd mentioned coaching at the Air Force Academy, at Memphis, now Alabama State. What made you want to get into coaching? What kind of motivated you to get into coaching?
Coaching fell into my lap. I had just gotten done playing professional ball in Italy, and I'd come home and during the summer. So I was working the University of Florida camp, and I was down in Gainesville working camp, having a good time. And we used fax then, and Mary had gotten a fax to come across a desk that they were looking for a volleyball coach. And so we're all sitting in Mary's office just talking, Mary Wise, and we're just chit-chatting it. And she said, Penny, I think you'll be good at this. Good at what? And she said, I really think you'll do a really good job at coaching. And I had 2 previous years as an assistant at Auburn. So it wasn't like I had not coached at the collegiate level. It's just that I had chosen to go back and play abroad. So senior women's administrator, Lynn Parks, called the senior women's administrator at Florida, who came and sat down on my court the next couple of days, gave her a call and said, I think she'll be fine. And I was hired on sight unseen. And I go to the University of Memphis, where I won 2 conference championships, 1 regular season, 1 conference tournament, took the team to the NCAAs, and it just took off from there. It was on the job training, but it took off from there.
What were some of those memories from that first experience, you know, being a head coach of that program? What are some of the highlights that you remember?
The biggest highlight and the one thing that I think we take for granted when we're young and we're vibrant and we can still play with our student athletes is when I couldn't articulate what I wanted them to do, I could just step out there on the court and show them. So that was
really cool. That's amazing. So
That's a highlight where I played with my University of Memphis team all the time. And when I got to the Air Force Academy, I played with them a lot. In fact, I played all the way up to the age of 36 until I became pregnant with my twins. So I was able to play years. My team, what I needed them to do. So that was pretty incredible, too. And those are things that we tend to take for granted.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so cool. I can only imagine what your players were thinking too, and probably influenced some competitiveness in the gym too.
Oh yeah, if they could block me, that made
their they can retire. I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun, and they've blocked me, and they've dug me, and I've played some defense, and it's. And those were fun days. Yeah.
So you're at Alabama. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Clarence.
You're good, Steven. Good.
You're at Alabama State now. And you talked a little bit about it earlier. You mentioned, you know, coaching at an HBCU. What is that environment like? What's so special about being on an HBCU campus and then in athletics as well?
I think because I have such a vast experience being at different conferences, playing at different levels, I've been able to come here and under my tutelage, they've won 6 SWAC championships. And I'm in my 11th year. We didn't play in 2020. So being able to just impact the young women at that level. But I think the biggest thing, the biggest impact, and first I want to say, is being on an HBCU campus, hearing all the cliches that you grew up with, which is pretty funny. Also, the unconditional love that you see on a daily basis, the second chances. That you might want to say, because before, the reason why they were established is because we weren't allowed to go and get an education at PWIs. But now we have the kids that are just a borderline that may not be able to make a 21 or 22 to get into in a state institution or just an institution that's going to give them that chance. And they're right on the cusp. And they keep scoring a 17 on the ACT. They can come to an HBCU and they just may not be a good test taker, a standard test taker, but they're very smart. They can comprehend and they are able to excel on this campus. But when I talk about the young women that have come through this program, I want to be clear. The young women that have come through since I've been here, we have lawyers now because I've been here 11 years. I have pharmacists. I have a plethora of teachers. I have finance, people that are in finance and business. I have people that work as an exec at Google, all out of an HBCU. One, because of the standard of excellence that we put in the gym, that's transferable to the classroom and to their life. And they get it. You don't get to practice here if you're failing. And that's what we did at the Air Force Academy. Coming to practice is a privilege, not a right. And so I've taken that lesson. And in order for you to excel here, you must excel in the classroom first. And I know because of that standard and value that we place on education here at the volleyball program, the professors on campus totally respect my women when they walk across campus. And that, my friend, is the difference.
Thank you for that. I do want to bring up your time at the Air Force and also just mentioned again, I never went to an HBCU, but a lot of our guests that we had in February just really reiterated a lot of what you talked about. You know, the community is there. Everyone is there rooting for each other there. The standard of excellence in education is through the roof and everybody supports that. So the fact that you support and encourage that within your athletes to, you know, develop and grow and, you know, become these esteemed professionals, you know, once they do graduate, really kind of ties back to what you talked about in a lot of these coaches, you know, haven't been doing it in which they weren't preparing people for, you know, potentially being on the Olympic team and learning the why behind it. And then same thing applies to the educational factor behind that too. So the fact that you instill that in your program at all times is great. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, you also did that at the Air Force Academy during, you know, their first season in Division One. Can you talk us through, you know, how you dealt with that challenge or how was that overall experience in, you know, in that new role?
I thought that was a phenomenal role. I thought the fact that I'd been at the Division One level and coming to a program that had excelled at the Division II level. And I want to start off by saying there are a lot of Division II schools that could beat up on a lot of D1 schools. And I believe Air Force Academy was one of them. The fact that I had the opportunity to go to such an esteemed institution, first of all, under the tutelage and a mentor of Colonel Randall Spetman, that allowed me to just to impact young women and train at a level where the expectation is to excel. And that the girls were so open, they were so open, so willing, and they were used to always giving their best. So that's an easy environment to walk into. They're gonna always give you their best. So that was an outstanding experience. Now this is the crazy part. This is the part I enjoy the most. He let me design my own locker room. So I found pleasure in creating something that they can call their own. So just with that alone, it gave them ownership. So I thought that was outstanding. We created our own locker room, which allowed us to create our own culture, which allowed us to set a different standard. And so that was outstanding. And even there, we had Rhodes Scholars. We had aeronautical engineers. We have our first young lady that played under me, Nicole Stillman, who is now an astronaut nominee. Yes.
So cool.
Yes. Stillwell. Nicole Stillwell.
So cool.
So it's to meet those type people, they are the elite. They are your elite minds. And it rubs off on you. And it was an incredible experience.
Yeah, what an awesome experience building a D1 program and starting that foundation. And like you mentioned before, just coaching so many awesome individuals and making them, you know, not just great athletes, but great people too, so they can excel in their careers out after volleyball. That's just so cool to hear you talk about that. That's awesome. We're running a little long here. Just want to make sure that you're okay. We have a few more questions we want to get to, but if you need to get somewhere, we can let you go. We're just loving this conversation with you.
I'm okay if you're okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We're great. All right.
That's good to hear.
Just wanted to check in.
First, Laura, am I doing okay?
You're doing great.
You're doing great. And, you know, listening to you, it reminds me because you and I are both very strong women and we had some clashes here and there. I mean, and our disagreements were not really strong or big or mattered or anything like that. But I remember, you know, it's been 20 years, Penny Lucas White as just being a really, really strong woman and nothing has changed. And that I would love to be at a school working as your SID again. That's what I could say. You know, we talk about Air Force, but that still was a big struggle. You know, for 4 years, you know, I worked the 1 year at D2. And, you know, those were some very lean years. Yeah. And it was really hard to be like, I got to find a way to write something, you know, when in that first year we lost to BYU, you know, 6-5-3 or something like that. I think we were still at, I don't think we were at rally scoring yet at the time. Yeah, it was still 15. Yeah. And I was like, but these kids were so amazing. And you guys, there's a great story. We got to go down to Louisiana for a tournament once in the middle of a big, big flood. Do you remember that? Mm. And yes, I had to drive a car. And the girls are in the car going, we can do it. We can get there. And, you know, it's up into our engine. And we're like, don't stop. Yes. And then we got stuck and the girls had to go to the bathroom. And so they, two of them ran out of the car, like with their pants up above their knees to go into a gas station to pee. And I'm like, if we stop, we're never going to get any further. We're
and, right.
Wow.
Those are the memories that I have. I remember those amazing things with those women who were so smart and so strong and
they did amazing. Their best. And that was you and Colonel Hines that had to drive to the airport and get us out of there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just, these women were so amazing and they were facing such great adversity in Division I. So hard, you know, I remember our setter Kat Daney couldn't have been more than 5'5" and she's playing against Hawaii and BYU 5'7".
Amazing.
And she was in there every day and pushing it. So yeah, it's a great stories.
And we trained them as though they were going to win. Yes. I never walked out on the court a loser, never thought I was going to lose. They never thought they would lose. But you have to train like that. But yeah, that's the environment that we had the opportunity to build. And it was a phenomenal experience, but they weren't going to ever give you less than 100. They weren't going to ever give you less than 100%.
Never. Never. It was a great formative experience in my life, you know, just getting into sports as well, to watch athletes keep going out there when they were clearly not
outmatched in stature before they took the 5'11" height limitations away.
Yeah. They were great women, and I'll let you guys keep going, but
that was amazing. I know. I loved it.
but that's how I begin to evolve. Because you got to be able to give them something in the locker room every pregame, every pre-match to make them think they can go out there and run through that wall and that they can do it. And we did beat a BYU. We went 5 with Utah 1 year. We went 5 with Colorado State. They were right there and they were smaller. But the mindset, it's all about your mindset. So we approached everything from a growth mindset. And it's just important, but it was a phenomenal experience. And I miss you, Laura.
Oh, you know, I'll say something and also because this is going to come out in 2 weeks. And if it doesn't happen, we can cut it. But, you know, I still do stats for Air Force and have watched some of these players and they always come out to our women's national team tryouts. Now our open program. And this year, one of them has been invited to our women's collegiate national team and as a middle blocker. And it, to me, showed a lot about, you know, you were part of the foundation of that program. And it might have taken 20 years because sometimes that's how long it takes to build a Division I program at the Air Force Academy. Just like the women's basketball team is the first men's or women's basketball team to make a semifinal of a Division I conference tournament happened this year. It takes 20 years to build a women's Division I program sometimes. And the Air Force Academy only has a limited number of women they can bring in every year.
That's right.
And that you were part of that foundation in building to the fact that Air Force has a woman now invited to the women's collegiate national team. And that's huge.
Yes, that's huge. Congratulations.
Yes.
Congratulations. Thank you.
All right. I'll let you guys go.
All right, guys.
I'm going to run out.
That was awesome. Penny, if you ever coach a men's team, please let me know because I'll be first to try out. I want to play for you.
Same.
You got me hyped up. I want to play volleyball for you.
Well, thank you.
Run low on assistance. Let me know. I'm just kidding. You're at the volleyball.
I'll serve water. I'll serve water on the bench. I don't care. I want to be involved.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about your coaching career, and we kind of skipped over your playing career. So I want to go back to that. And you kind of touched a little bit about the national team. So I want to talk about, I want you to talk about your experience with the national team, the U.S. Women's National Team.
My experience with the Women's National Team, which I, living in the house, because we didn't all have our place. There was six of us living in a house back then, but I am still friends with those women. We take vacations together. We talk. We've shared families, babies, puppies. It's just because, you know, you might have a team and, you know, you have your wins and your losses. But you know what most players remember the most are the relationships. I had the opportunity to play. I came off the bench. I wasn't a starter. That part doesn't bother me at all. But I remember staying after every practice with Steve Timmons and with Sammons. And I wanted to start so they would work with me after every practice. I'd hit balls. Because the men and the women used to train in the same gym in San Diego. So it was just outstanding how they would stay and work with me. And I wanted to break the starting lineup because that's who I am. And the relationships, I will forever be friends with those guys. I will forever be friends with my teammates, Deidre Collins Parker, Ruth Lawanson, Bev Robinson, all those guys that we played with, Kim Oden. I played with all those women and we're still friends today. And so that part, I'll never forget. The practices, I don't even remember. But I can tell you about all the fun times in the house, the dinners, you know, and all of that. We learned a lot in practice, don't get me wrong. But it's the relationships that are formed. Because women have to bond to battle. And I tell you, I'm so happy for the team that just won the gold. I'm ecstatic. I'm very, very happy because they stand on the shoulders of your Flo Hymans, you know, your Debbie Greens and all those guys. And that's a wonderful thing. But they had to have formed some type of bond for them to rise and be able to compete at that level. And that's a good thing. When you have minimal distractions and you can focus on the chemistry, then you can grow and excel. When you can play harder for the title or the name on the front of the shirt than you do for the name on the back of the shirt, then you've reached a pinnacle where you can succeed and excel. And that's what it's about.
That was amazing.
I got chills. Run through a wall. Steven, we got to get a volleyball and get on.
Let's go.
But I'm so inspired. Thank you for that answer, too. And, you know, I just feel like you're about to add to it with this next question we're about to ask you, because we're going to ask you about, you know, the time when you did play professionally, you know, domestically and then internationally in Italy and Germany. What was that like, you know, playing on home soil in the USVL? And also, what was it like playing internationally? So a lot of these philosophies you talked about, you know, how much of those and how many of those apply to, you know, playing professionally there?
Oh, my. Well, you learn so much playing abroad. It's a whole different game. So it's a different mindset because you play with a lot more finesse. Just because of just the different styles of play. So I'm exposed to a different style of play, but to play on your home soil. Now, this is funny because I did this the other day. First, I enjoyed playing in Italy. That's where I met my husband. And I loved living in the community. meaning not on an Air Force base or anything like that. My husband was an officer in the Air Force back then, but I lived with the Italians, with my teammates, all in a villa. So that was a lot of fun in that small community. Same as in Germany, you know, I lived in the German town of Stuttgart, and I lived with all of those individuals. So I had the opportunity to speak English every day in Germany, and that was easy. But when I went to Italy, a lot of the Italians didn't speak English down south, because first I was in Matera, but then I went to Agrigento, and they didn't speak English. So I was forced to learn Italian, which I am grateful for today. But to be able to play on my own soil, and I happened to go and Google the Colorado Thunder when I played for the NVA and we won it. The average age on our team was, I think at that time, was 32. It was Carrie Downey, myself, and all these different names. And I and Verna Jewelton, my then assistant at Air Force. So we're playing. And I read the article by a gentleman that wrote. He says he was so close. He says he had never understood the game, but he had the opportunity to watch and to see since Penny Lucas White kept dropping that inside hand that when the attacker hit it, the ball went straight down. And he watched the game from that angle. And I'm like, I did that. He said, I did that. So he actually did an article on the game, but we ended up winning the league that year. Nebraska was in first place. Colorado was in second. And because, of course, they draw so well in Nebraska, they had the finals in Nebraska. I'll never forget, we were down 0-2. And this was before rally scoring. And I remember in between the two sets, those first two sets, Gary Sato sat down and talked to us. But I told him, you can put your seatbelt on to the rest. We're going five. We're not going out like that. And we came out and we won in five. And the last play, Carrie Downey told me, because she knew who they were going to set. And I can't remember the young lady's name, but she was on the USA team at the time. Her last name was Weston. And Carrie Downey says, Penn, she's going to look where she wants to hit when she's airborne. And when you see it, press. And I'm telling you, Allison Weston, I might be right, might be wrong. She goes up and I saw her look going sharp cross court. And I dropped that inside hand, point, match, Colorado Thunder. I turned around to cheer, and nobody knew the ball went straight down except for Verna. And Verna came and jumped on top of me, and we had just won. And this old 36-year-old woman ended up with MVP of the tournament.
Hey,
that is amazing.
Wow. That was a lot of fun. And it was awesome because our boss and those guys allowed us to fly out on the weekends and play. We would train. Sometimes Gary and his assistant will come in and train us. And sometimes they wouldn't. We'd train and then we'd fly out and play on the weekends. It was awesome.
Really quickly, and I think we might switch gears to a new role that you have right now on the board of the USA Volleyball Board of Directors. But wanted to ask, and I don't know how closely you pay attention to, you know, women's professional volleyball, like Athletes Unlimited right now in the U.S., but maybe you can speak to, from your experience playing professional in the States, and how important it is for this resurgence of professional leagues like Athletes Unlimited now.
It is so important and vital. It's important for our younger athletes to emulate, to see the upside, to see how far they can take the gift that God has given them and blessed them with. And it allows us to play in front of our loved ones. To be abroad, yes, that's cool and everything, but to be able to play at home around all the people that love and support you, that's priceless. So I just think it's so important. I think it's the best thing we could have ever done. And I'm really enjoying the platform. I love the innovation. I love the fact that it's not traditional, it's different. And all of these phenomenal athletes get to play with one another. It's not a set team yet. We got to grow it. But I love the fact that we're innovative enough and that we're brave enough to put it out there and to go for it. I love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it's successful so far. They're about to start their second season too. And I think that innovativeness that you spoke to is kind of a nice hook to it and might get people excited to watch it too, because we've talked about the uniqueness of just it's a different team every week and they have to build that chemistry with a new team every week, which I think is just so cool and so unique.
And I think it's cool that they all are training in the same city. So yep. You're still creating chemistry and bonds. So that's why it's so unique. And now you're getting to really get to know and become good teammates to more than just 12, but to maybe 30 or so or 40. I don't know, but it's awesome.
Yeah. And it shows, I think you talked a little bit about it too, but it shows young girls watching that there's something after college that they can strive for. Cause you know, playing professional overseas internationally, it's just not that well known until you get kind of later into your career. Sometimes until your senior year, you might find out about it in college. So I think it's really cool. Really important for the growth of the sport.
And with current events right now, we don't know when the next time we're going to be able to live life the way we once did, you know, considering the current climate with the pandemic.
Exactly.
Just the unease in Europe right now, the Ukraine and Europe and, you know, just everything else that's going on. So it's a great time to embrace this. Mm-hmm.
I do want to circle back a little bit to, you know, your current role with the board of directors. Can you just talk about your time on the board and different committees you're involved in and, you know, what that experience has been like? You know, it's just, you know, very different than, you know, just, you know, your typical coaching and, you know, being an athlete and being on a national team and playing internationally. So can you just talk us through this new bucket, new hats you wear on the board of directors, basically?
Absolutely. I think the interesting part right now is I'm very new. I've only joined the board in July, so I hadn't been on there a full year yet. I'm still learning. However, I'm able to sit and I'm actually being able to see what USA Volleyball does from a broad spectrum, the umbrella that it, you know, that everything falls under, how I have to be completely more broad-minded and for the overall good of the sport. I should start jumping on these probably after we meet in May, when we actually have our first annual face-to-face meeting. So that's going to be really incredible, where I really get to know a lot of my colleagues. I got to hang out with Jamie Davis and David Gentile at the Final Four. So that was interesting, where we were able to interface with the AVCA different board members and just to see how we can continue to collaborate and continue to grow the sport. But it's been very, very interesting and a very learning experiment for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Earlier you brought up the need to, you know, grow the game from a, you know, aspect or a standpoint of diversity, as to, you know, think differently and, you know, just go about everything that way. Have you had the chance to bring up, you know, different initiatives and ideas to grow the sport of volleyball while being on the board right now? Or is that still an ever developing thing as you're kind of getting your feet set?
Yes, sir. That's an ever developing thing. That's an initiative. That's something that I'm sure I will have the opportunity to talk about, to discuss, to explore, and to implore all of the members that are in a position to continue to grow the sport. That's definitely something I would like.
Awesome. Penny, such a great conversation with you. I think we barely just scratched the surface.
Guys, I think is this my internet?
Can you hear us just fine? Can you hear us?
I can hear you now. Could you guys hear me?
You're breaking out a little bit, but I think we got everything. But it's starting to let's get ready to say goodbye here so we don't run into more internet issues. Because we've had a great conversation with you.
Yeah.
I think we just scratched the surface of what we can talk to you about, and we'll definitely have to have you back on. Yeah.
So we could have talked to you for another couple hours, to be honest.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
We gotta wrap it.
Yeah. Before we let you go, is there anything else that was left on the table? Anything else you'd like to share before we say bye?
If I was to leave any young person or anybody that's listening to this podcast, I would want to leave them with two things. I want to talk about your mindset. I want you to understand that you are the sum of your thoughts. And so whatever you're thinking today is going to catapult you into where you will be 5 years from now. So number two thought is make sure that you're in a growth mindset, that you're feeding yourself with positive thoughts, and that you're surrounding yourself with positive people. It'll make you better. And I wish you well.
Awesome. That was great. Thank you so much. And best of luck as you continue the success at your program at Alabama State next season. And thank you again. We're definitely gonna have to have you back on for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'll see you in those main meetings. I'll also be there.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, cool. I'll see you there. Laura, are you going to be there?
You know, I can't because I don't know if you remember that I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and that's the weekend of the big Star Wars convention.
I remember.
It was like volleyball, Star Wars. Well, I do volleyball most of my life. Just give me 4 days for Star Wars.
I know. Guys, thank you so much. It was a blast.
It really was. Thank you so much, Penny.
Mm-hmm. Laura, it was great seeing you.
Thank you, Penny. It's great to see you. Look, we'll keep in touch now that you're on the board.
Yes. All right, guys.
Definitely.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, we've had a lot of guests come on and mention that they started their career as an athlete by playing the game of basketball. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely one of those. And then it's crazy that her high school didn't have a basketball team. That's usually one of the, you know, kind of bare minimums of a program that you have is basketball. You don't have usually volleyball at that standpoint, but it was kind of flipped for that one. And she ended up trying out for volleyball in 10th grade and fell in love with the sport, like we all usually do when we start playing volleyball.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And the fact that she met Flo Hyman and got her autograph is just like, again, full circle history. Like, that's signed, sealed, delivered. Bam. Just great.
Yeah. And then later on in life, played with Flo. Really close friendship with Flo, too. We talked, she mentioned it in the interview, just how small the volleyball community was back then and still is now. That just shows the full circle, the close knit family that the volleyball community is.
Yeah. And I think you made a good point too. Just that's how it is in every city and kind of state.
Oh yeah.
You know, from here in Colorado, Colorado Springs to Denver to Long Beach and Los Angeles. And, you know, I'll say Dallas cause you're from Dallas, but you know, same thing applies there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, seriously, it does. Uh-huh. Volleyball is everywhere. And if you are in the volleyball community, you're connected with, like, you'll meet somebody and you're connected somehow, you know, you played club together, club in the same state or something, you know, something like that, or your siblings played with each other. I loved how she was talking about, she was a basketball player and just in the neighborhood. And this is true for a lot of neighborhoods, just basketball courts are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying right here, we need to get more volleyball nets in the neighborhoods. Like let's make that like just a staple around. Mm-hmm. And just so that you can just bring a ball and you know, you can start playing.
Mm-hmm. There is such a thing as one-on-one volleyball. So all you need is two people to really get something going over the court. It really helps
just
to teach
practice,
you that positioning
and everything. Hitting or
absolutely
some pepper, like something like that. But that's cool. That's cool that she, her high school actually had volleyball instead of basketball. And then she was just fell in love with it from there.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing about her coaching career too. You know, starting at Memphis, then going to the Air Force Academy and now at Alabama State, and how coaching kind of just fell into her lap. She said she was just finished playing professionally in Italy. And before that, she was actually an assistant, I believe, at Auburn. And then she decided she wasn't done playing, so had to go play professionally in Italy. But then she came back, was doing a camp with Mary Wise, head coach at the University of Florida. And they were just kind of sitting around talking, and Mary Wise got a fax. If you don't know what a fax machine is, it's like texting on paper, maybe. I don't know for young people listening.
That's an interesting explanation. You know, they don't even know what the pound sign is. It's all hashtag now. Anyways, we're not going to go.
Yeah, we won't get into that. That's for another episode. But got a fax from Memphis asking for a volleyball or asking, you know, showing that they needed a volleyball coach at Memphis. And Mary went to Penny and said she thinks that she would be great at this. And that's kind of how it got started. And she was kind of hired on the spot. They loved her right away, which I totally get after talking to her. So that was really cool to hear her talk about, you know, her origin into coaching and getting into coaching.
You know what I really love with just everything else with the kind of coach she is? Early on in her coaching career, she stepped on the court with her players and played against them all the time. I think the best coaches do that. I mean, it's so much fun for the athletes, and her being, you know, as prestigious as she is, it's a big deal to block your coach or to get a hit around your coach.
Oh, yeah.
Or to dig one of your coach's hits. It's amazing. So the fact that she did that while she's still, you know, earlier on in her career, I'm pretty sure she can get out there and you know, show Miles Dunn now too.
But, oh, definitely.
And I think her schedule doesn't permit a lot of that too. But I mean, just the fact that you're coaching, you do that is amazing. I think it goes a long way with your players, a longer way than you really think it does. And just to add to what her coaching philosophy is, I mean, she coaches not only volleyball, but she also coaches her athletes on how to be a great human. How to build leaders so they can excel after volleyball, because that's a lot of the conversation that's had with athletes across the board. Is like, what can we use you like? So it's like, how can we use your athleticism? How can you benefit our team? And then you're done after that. And there's no progression. There's no development there. But she coaches and teaches that after the sport is done, this is how you're going to be successful in life. And I think that is amazing. And a lot more coaches and programs need to start doing that to her level. Definitely a big respect to her for that. And, you know, just starting a D1 volleyball program at the United States Air Force Academy is also a pretty big deal. You know, I mean, without that, you know, without her relationship with Laura, who knows, you know, when we would have been able to get her on an interview too. But again, side note, I love their relationship. I know they have been through the good and the bad, and it's all translated into just a much loving and supportive relationship for them both too. I'm really glad they got to know each other and they got to reconnect on our interview call for sure.
Yeah, that was cool. Really cool. Yeah. Like you said, to start that foundation for a, you know, Division I volleyball program at the Air Force Academy. And like you said, the coaching philosophy, so cool to hear her talk about that and the relationships she's built and the people that her athletes, you know, became after they were athletes playing volleyball. She mentioned lawyers and teachers, and even I think she said astronaut. I think I got there. I think she has an astronaut.
I think so. Yeah.
Either astronaut or astronaut in training or somewhere in the space program. Like, that's just so cool and such a testament to who she is as a coach. Absolutely. And as a person. You know, she talked about her playing career, playing professionally overseas, domestically with the women's national team, U.S. women's national team, and just the lifelong friends that she's made through that experience and playing volleyball. And that just goes back to that tight-knit volleyball community, too. These are friends that you will stay connected with your entire life. She still has dinners with those teammates and has regular calls with them. it's just really cool to hear her talk about that, and like something that we see firsthand when we go to our USA Volleyball Adult Nationals, the Open Nationals. People come together after being apart for so long and play volleyball together. It's just really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Really is a lifelong sport.
Excuse me. And also, just one of the many hats she wears, and you know, it's like a phrase we like to talk about and bring up on the podcast. I mean, she's also been elected to the USA Volleyball Board of Directors as of July 2021, last year. She's learning the ropes, and she's, you know, learning where she not necessarily fits in, but, you know, just learning what she can realistically immediately impact and what that long-term plan looks like for improvement and change, and how she can just bring in her expertise and contribute to the board of directors. And I'm really excited to see what she implements and really starts to, you know, really suggest for change and what she can do. And we know she can move mountains, so I'm very, 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 very excited to see, you know, what that looks like and, you know, how we can help on our end and as, you know, regular staff members for USA Volleyball in that long-term and short-term plans that she you know, she's developing right now too. But again, I know we always say it, but one of my favorite interviews on the podcast, we just keep interviewing great people.
I know.
Amazing people. And I think that's really good that we're having this good problem of saying, oh, wait, this is also my favorite interview, but we just had another one, but this is also my favorite. I think that is a really good problem to have. So
I know. Yeah, we're going to have a tough time going through on our kind of around our 1 year anniversary, or maybe around the 50 year mark when we go back and look, or 50 episode mark. I think I said 50 year. Mm-hmm. 50 episode mark.
A long time.
That's a long time. You know, 50 episode mark when we look back at all of our episodes and kind of pick out our favorite moments and stuff. That's a good problem to have, like you said, though.
Absolutely. I mean, episode landmark number 30, trademark. I can't talk right now, you guys. I'm sorry, but episode milestone number 30, here we are. So can't wait for that 1 year mark to see where we land there. But again, just really good conversation with Penny. And we want to, you know, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for joining us and taking time out of your schedule. Again, we are ready to play now. Whenever you make that team, that boys team, just go ahead and shoot us a message. We will be mm-hmm. your first two.
Applicants. I'm there.
What am I talking about? First two recruits ready to come out of retirement and play. I'm stretching if you guys didn't see that and hear that grunt. But yeah, we all know Penny has inspired so many guests, so many of our guests to, you know, just to want to get on the court. If we could, you know, we would love to go back and play for Penny. She's so inspiring, and we're so glad she's just had the chance to impact the audience and the players and the coaches and the volleyball personnel and the young and the individuals, just everybody she's influenced across the board. Just what a great career Penny has had as well. And it's continuing on into all of her philosophies and what she's teaching now. Just a great interview. Excuse me. Just a great interview overall. And, you know, we want to thank you again, Penny, for, taking the time to interview with us.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that infectious energy to our podcast and to our listeners. Definitely, I know for a fact you inspired someone today, so really cool. Thank you again. We'll definitely bring you on for another episode later on down the road. We're excited. Kind of wrapping up here, let's move on to some upcoming events. We'll start off, like we mentioned at the top of the show, the 2022 Beach Pro Tour Elite 16 in Rosarito, Mexico on March 24th through the 27th. All matches can be streamed on volleyballworld.tv, subscription required, and you can follow along on USA Volleyball social media and usavolleyball.org. Registration is now live for the 2022 Girls 18s Junior Nationals, Girls Junior Nationals, Boys Junior Nationals, and Open Nationals.
Head over to Nationals.
That's the Adult Nationals, USA Volleyball Adult Nationals. Head over to usavolleyball.org to register today.
Adults, sign up for Opens right now. No excuses.
There you go. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour continues. We have a few events coming up this month and still time to register, starting with the Carolina Junior Flyers March BRQ in Pinehurst, North Carolina, March 26th. The Lone Star ASC Sand March BRQ number 3 in Cedar Park, Texas on March 26th as well. The North Texas Mad Sand BRQ 3 in Plano, Texas also on March 26th, and the Lone Star ASC Sand April BRQ 1 in Cedar Park, Texas on April 2nd. Good luck to everyone competing, and you can learn more about the USA Volleyball Beach Tour and other upcoming events at usavolleyball.org. It's qualifier season, indoor qualifier season, bid tournament season, and the upcoming tournaments include the Mideast Girls Qualifier, Week 2 in Indianapolis, March 25th through the 27th, the Pacific Northwest Girls 18s Qualifier in Spokane, Washington, March 26th through the 28th, and April 1st through April 3rd, the Sunshine Volleyball Classic Girls Qualifier in Orlando, Florida on April 1st through the 3rd. Clarence Hughes will be there. Go find him. Say hi. At
the championship desk.
At the championship desk. Say hi. And also the Red Rock Rave Girls Qualifier in Las Vegas, April 2nd through the 4th, and April 8th through the 10th. I don't know why you're laughing.
Never mind. I can't. Yeah. I thought you said a curse word there, Kyle. I will not be giving $100 bills at Sunshine Qualifier. We'll be giving out bids to nationals. So I think that's worth a little bit more than $100. Maybe not. Who knows? Nobody's going to find me, but we'll see. I also want to point out, because you mentioned Mad Sand, and it just clicked in a memory of Salt Lake City week one, weekend one. And you're going to love this, Stephen. We had like Mad Frog have like five or six teams that podiumed over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I know they're a Texas club.
It's a Dallas
and
you're club. A Texas Dallas club. Back.
Yep. There I know you you're a Dallas guy. So just wanted to report that to you directly.
Represent. They always do well. Mad Frog, they always do well. They have a lot of good teams. That's a good club.
We were handed out medals. I was like, are you guys kidding me? You guys need to stop this. If you guys have one more team qualify, we're going to have to pull the plug. I'm just kidding. That's just another good problem for a club to have, with just all these great and amazing teams qualifying in all your age groups. And, you know, best luck to all those teams in nationals. But just a side note, you know, Mad Sand translated to Mad Frog, translated to Dallas, translates to Steven. So I just had to tell him the good news of his hometown. Hey,
that's well, the volleyball community, right? It's very small.
But yeah, reminder, listeners, you guys can rate, review, and share this podcast with your friends. Like always, it helps us grow and reach new listeners. Amazing interviews across the board from last April up until now. We have a good problem of just having our favorite interview with be our most recent interview. We're seeing support come through, and we just want to thank you all for being friends of the pod. We always appreciate it from the bottom of our hearts. You guys can email us. You can chat with us. You can, in fact, request topics and future guests that you want to have on this show. All you have to do is email at the USAV show at usav.org. Just leave us feedback, or just let us know who you want to have on the show next, what you want us to talk about. We will do our best to get it on our schedule of podcast events this season. Also, reminder, episodes drop every other Wednesday, with the occasional surprise episode, depending on how we're feeling and what's going on in our USA Volleyball world there. But again, until next time, thank you all for listening to the USA Volleyball Show. You already know, we're the official podcast of... That's it. That's all I got. Almost cracked my voice. Of USA Volleyball. See you guys next time.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson. Produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producers are Kyle Scholzen and Laura Fawcett. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.